CIS awarded her the 2010 Adele Dalsimer Prize for Distinguished Dissertation in Irish Studies. She's currently the NEH Keough Fellow at the Keough Naughton Institute for Irish Studies at Notre Dame, where she is revising her dissertation into a book about music collectors and music collecting for presumed publication by the University of Wisconsin Press. She hopes to finish her book at the Library of Congress this summer when she takes up the Alan Fellowship in Folklife Studies before returning to Ireland to start her next project, a comprehensive collection of songs composed in the Aran Islands over the last 200 years. She also works as a broadcaster and musician, and she plays a dynamite fiddle. Deirdre Nicanila.
Thanks very much. The first thing I need to do is to apologize for my voice. I have a bit of a sore throat, and also for having to leave this conference far too early this afternoon. There's no way out of it. So if you want to talk to me, get me straight after this session, because I'll be gone, okay? So the first thing to do maybe is to show you a map, if this is going to kick in, about the area, to show the area that I'm talking about. So the Aran Islands are shaded there. They're lying across the mouth of Galway Bay, Galway City, kind of in the corner of the bay there. And the Aran Islands and the area on the mainland to the north of it, Connemara, that's a Gaeltacht, or an Irish-speaking region where Irish is still the vernacular. So that's the region that I'm working on. The Aran Islands have been described as surely one of the most written about places in Ireland. So Connemara must therefore be the second most written about place. Both are known internationally for their cultural wealth and contrasting physical beauty. They form the largest Gaeltacht, or Irish speaking area, and as such they occupy a special place in the cultural and historical life of Ireland. I'm going to talk about a collection of recordings that were created in these places by my late aunt Barbara Quinn, who worked for a time as a teacher in Connemara, but she spent most of her life in Aran, where she married a fisherman and had four children. Between 1958 at the latest and the 1970s, the period that her collection spans, emigration was a constant of life. The population of the entire region declined by 16% from around 19,000 to around 16,000, and the population of Inishmore, the island where Barbara and I are from, declined from around 8,000 to 870. The islands, the three Aran Islands, didn't get mainline electricity until 1975 at the earliest. So before that, islanders used wet and dry batteries and generators to power their radios, record players, and a handful of televisions. The local economy throughout the region was then one of subsistence, mainly farming and fishing. But an estimated 20,000 tourists per annum visited Aran. In June 1955, the American folk music collector and ethnomusicologist Sidney Robertson Cowell came to the Aran Islands and stayed in my grandparents' guest house in Killivery in Inishmore, which you see there. She had with her an EMI reel-to-reel tape recorder she had borrowed from the BBC. The eldest of the household of nine children, Barbara, was then 20 years old, and she was, I believe, struck by the wonder of this new technology. It was not only the first time that a recording machine had been brought into the house, it was also the first time a tape recorder was used in Aran. Although I never had the chance to ask her because she died when I was seven, Barbara must have been intrigued by Sydney's work and by the machine, because soon after, when portable reel-to-reel tape recorders appeared on the market in Ireland, she was inspired to acquire her own apparatus and to begin collecting music. By 1958, she had bought a Philips EL3541 tape recorder, or so I reckon from this photograph. It's the only way I have to identify the model. And Barbara was the first islander in Inishmore to own a tape recorder, or indeed any sound recording equipment. She went on to create the most substantial and probably the most significant body of field recordings of music ever to emerge from Aran. My purpose today is not to survey the collection, but to discuss Barbara's methodology, a methodology that has inspired a new theoretical framework that might help us to talk about recording and to make sense of what are widely known as amateur collections.
I'll make a particular case for collections created by locals, and I'll argue for the contextualisation of all manner of sources so that we can make the best and fairest use of them all. This argument has particular resonance in the 21st century, where increasing access to digital technology is enabling previously marginalised sectors of society to create and disseminate their cultural artefacts at an unprecedented and astonishing rate. But before I proceed with that, I do want to give you a taste of Bailiúchán Bhairbre, as we call it, or Barber's Collection. So, have a listen.
Tell them all I was all asking for them. And this is Tom Deity leading the phone.
Jean-Pierre.
W-H-Y
is it?
Hello, Dee. The Barnabas doing fine, and all the gang here are wonderful.
Here is the weather forecast for the next 24 hours. Regional forecasts, regions northwest, northeast, east.
Irish Sea, very good, 3, becoming northwesterly, 5 or 6, backing southwesterly.
Whatever will be.
And there are 40 shades of green.
And God bless America too.
Vi går inte igen till Arte och är i Bregoner och vi ska de illa med att få en inglesa att hon ska ta oss mot. Jag går. Kärta av,
kassar.
The diversity of this collection is radically different to the common representation of music in Aran, which focuses primarily on its folk or traditional music. That focus has to do with the representation of Aran as a bastion of traditional Irish culture, and also with the agendas of professional collectors who were focused on preserving what might be lost. Indeed, none of the other collections documenting the music of Aran match the breadth of Bailiúchán Bhairbre, which shows a remarkable range of music, both mediated and locally performed by people of all ages and a variable musical ability and talent, recorded in houses, pubs, a school, a car, clips recorded off the radio, bootleg recordings, and audio letters. Bailiúchán Bhairbre appears to be the most faithful representation of the actuality of the contemporary musical milieu in Aran and in Connemara, by which I mean what people were listening to as well as what they were performing and creating. The diversity of the collection, coupled with Barbara's different approaches to recording, prompted me to look more closely at her methodology. The key to understanding her methodology is first to understand her motives. Although Barbara didn't articulate her motives for collecting music, it is possible to establish what they were by examining her collection and by drawing on the understandings of those who witnessed her work. The first thing to be said is that Barbara sometimes regarded herself as a music collector. She made this clear not only in the content of her collection, but also when, from time to time, she called herself Ciarán Mac Mahona. This self-styled comparison with one of Ireland's most well-known contemporary collectors and radio broadcasters of traditional music, whose programmes Ciúil Ti Tíre and Job of Journey Work were very popular when Barbara was collecting, is crucial to our understanding of her motives. At the time, Mac Mahona was not only treated as a celebrity by Irish traditional musicians, he was also regarded as an oracle, or at the very least, a chronicler of that music. Barbara's self-styled and public comparison with him was clearly a strategic move on her part to encourage people to welcome her and her tape recorder, just as he and his machines were welcomed throughout the country. More than a fieldwork strategy, however, it also suggests that she imagined that some of the music around her was in danger of being lost and that she, as a collector, might be able to document it. She recognised the element of preservation in the work of recording. She deliberately set out to collect music. She set herself a high standard, a professional standard for recording the people around her. Not only did she focus on the stars of local music making, as any music collector might, she also tried frequently to capture the best possible quality of performance in the best possible quality of sound recording. It's clear, therefore, that as a collector, Barbara had a strong sense of purpose and a sense of the value of her work, as well as a clear understanding of how best to achieve her goals. So regardless of its amateur status, her collection can be considered in the light of the work of contemporary professional collectors with whom she shared some goals. Along with the collector's motives, Barbara had another motive that is fundamentally different, a motive that marks her collection as exceptional. This motive is best illustrated in terms of the folklorist Henry Glassy's theory about the traditional performing arts of Ballymenone, County Fermanagh, a theory that resonates in Aran, if not throughout many parts of Ireland, which holds that artistic performance achieves engaged union on a base of aristocratic reciprocity. One of the primary purposes of the work of collectors who record music is to document performances. However, Barbara saw the recording machine not simply as the means to document performances, but also as an instrument with which she could ultimately increase her involvement or participation in the local practice of communal music making. As an audience member, her frequent introductions of the recording machine into the local practice of communal music making represent repeated efforts to engage once again with performers, to acknowledge their talent, fortitude, wit, strength, and duty, but in a new fashion. She also imagined that by recording those around her, she was not only creating more opportunities for people to share and to enjoy live music, she was also providing them with a novel opportunity to hear the sound of recorded local performances, an opportunity they had rarely, if ever, had before. She imagined that by helping to create these new and additional opportunities to appreciate local artistry, she, a non-musician, was becoming a performer within that milieu. She imagined that by recording those around her, she could insert herself into the local aristocracy of performance and so contribute more to the local practice of communal music making. Her role in these cases is termed here as that of a recordist, a person who enjoys the operation of recording and the experience of listening to and sharing the resulting recordings, but for whom the documentary purpose of recording is a secondary concern. Evidence to support this interpretation of Barbara's other motive for collecting music is abundant in her collection, particularly in the recordings that demonstrate her frequently generous and opportunistic, sometimes chaotic, and apparently carefree attitude to recording. The difference between a collector and a recordist might best be determined not so much by the apparent thoroughness or quality of their work, but by examining their respective relationships with time. The collector's purpose is to document the present for posterity so that future generations might know what the music of the past sounded like. This is an example of what Benjamin Filene calls memory work. It is, in his words, an effort to string lines between past, present, and future. Writing in 1956, Sidney Robertson Cowell captured a sense of this historical purpose and also the feeling of urgency that characterized and impelled it. She wrote, "Recording is not necessarily a museum thing, of course, in case that was implied, but is the only true way of knowing, preserving the knowledge of what native culture is in a form that can then be circulated with truth. The old is being snowed under so fast at the moment, and people will want so badly to know what it actually was in another generation or two, it needs an extra support at the moment." The recordist, on the other hand, is less concerned with the future, with the past, or indeed with any time except the present. For them, the purpose of recording is to enjoy and to contribute to the current moment. That future generations might also be able to enjoy and benefit from such recordings is, for the recordist, a secondary concern. Barbara played each of these roles, the collector and the recordist, at different times and sometimes simultaneously. Nevertheless, being a recordist was more important to her than being a collector. The number of recordings created by Barbara the recordist outnumbers the number of recordings created by Barbara the collector by at least 3-1. Although there were times when she strove, as a collector would, for the best possible quality of sound, and times when she succeeded in producing good quality recordings, usually when she could exert some influence over the setting, there were many more times when she acted as a recordist, times when her lack of control over an unwieldy setting didn't stop her from recording, times when she demonstrated a carelessness that in a collector would warrant criticism. She was not, for instance, very particular about documenting contextual information for each recording. The vast majority of tapes in the collection are unlabeled and undated, so it's difficult to determine the order in which she recorded, and indeed to identify the contents of each recording. In her primary role as a recordist, however, documenting such details was ultimately less important to her than the actual act of recording. Being a recordist was about living in the moment, not about manufacturing memory. Being a recordist was not just more important to Barbara than being a collector, it was in fact more vital. While she certainly regarded music collecting as a worthy pursuit and capitalised on the golden opportunity she had to collect local music, she clearly felt the need to participate more keenly than the urge to document. Long after her machine broke down and her tapes were momentarily silenced, the personal and collective memories of the occasions upon which she recorded, her family, friends and neighbours, sustained her and them. In the end, it emerges that her primary motive for collecting music in Aran and Connemara was to connect with the people around her, to make the journey envisioned by Glassy from separation to social accord. This motive explains why recording was, for a great part of her life, such a consuming passion for Barbara, as her brother Stefan describes, and I paraphrase and translate what he said here. He says, "It was a marvellous thing at the time for her. She had great fun with it. And I might as well say that she lived with it, or she was consumed by it. She recorded plenty of songs. Her heart and soul was in it." Stefan's focus on Barbara's emotional connection with her work is revealing, especially in relation to her status as a local collector and recordist. As a local, she was, of course, conveniently resident in her field on a relatively permanent basis. She spoke the local language and was often friends with or related to those whom she recorded. Her familiarity with her contributors usually helped rather than hindered her work. Locals responded well to her, and sometimes better than they responded to professional collectors. Knowing that she was not collecting music for a broadcast or for an archive, they may have been less intimidated by her efforts. More significantly, she was documenting a world of music from the inside. Her aesthetic principles of collecting and her style of collecting were forged by the generally democratic, pluralistic, and open-minded aesthetic of her native musical milieu. For Barbara, a good musical performance, whatever its context and whatever its style, content, origin, language or instrumentation, constituted a contribution to local musical life and as such deserved to be respected, valued and cherished. Her chief motive, to connect with the people around her through music, was also a profoundly local concern. Most significantly of all, however, Barbara was more emotionally invested in the practice she recorded than any visitor could be. The intensity of her relationship with the local practice of communal music making could never be matched by a visiting collector. Barbara's identity as an amateur collector was equally vital to her style of music collecting. As an amateur, she was free of the constraints imposed on professional collectors. The amount of time or money she spent on collecting was not regulated or controlled by a higher authority or by an employer. Her choice of material and of recording arena was not prescribed or regulated by an agenda of preservation, publication, or broadcasting. Consequently, Barbara differs from professional and visiting collectors because she had the winning combination of time, inclination, freedom, and the means that were necessary for her to indulge in her style of music collecting and to develop her recordist methodology. These were luxuries that remained beyond the reach of many professionals. Of course, being an amateur collector did have a negative effect on Barbara's work. Her habit of neglecting to identify the contents of a recording is a flaw of her collection. There are also some surprising omissions. There are, for instance, a number of notable performers whom Barbara did not record, performers here on the screen, whom she might have recorded, people who were recorded just a few years earlier by Sidney Robertson Cowell. It appears that Barbara and her tape recorder were never present on occasions when these singers performed. However, there are more tapes, possibly featuring some of these singers, waiting to come to light, so we should reserve judgment for the moment. So to conclude, I will summarise. We've learned that being a local and being an amateur were essential agents in the creation of the conditions in which Barbara's recordist methodology emerged. The negative aspects of being a local or an amateur collector, or both, are, I feel, outnumbered by the positive, which in this case produced a winning methodology for collecting music. Considering this fact, it is surprising and even disappointing that local and amateur music collections don't often receive the attention they deserve. Barbara certainly created an extraordinary collection of recordings. With her winning personality and her ability to bring humour to an occasion, she developed a casual, playful style of collecting music that gives a tremendous sense of fun to her collection, a quality that resembles and represents the spirit in which the music was made. This sense of fun belies the seriousness of her motives. As a collector, she documented historically significant music, just as any professional collector would have done, but she had another motive, one that was driven by the hope of belonging, of achieving oneness, as Glassy called it, and by the fear of loss or lonesomeness. She imagined that recording the music makers around her would enable her to connect with them and with the community in general. In that quest, she recorded everything from the mediocre to the excellent in the hope of encountering the sublime, both in music and in communal feeling. Her other motive, which was radically different to those of other music collectors, inspired her recordist methodology, a methodology that has yielded a representation of unequaled historical accuracy. The sense of fun in her collection also belies the seriousness and indeed the magnitude of her achievement. Bailleachán Waidhbhre stands out of the milieu of music collecting in Ireland as a singular accomplishment. It offers what Hugh Cheap called a freshness of approach to the story of music in Éireann. It indicates that contextual information is sometimes overlooked in music collections. It proves that amateur representations of this kind are important primary historical documents. Not only do they sometimes document times and places for which primary historical evidence is lacking, they can also challenge the traditional narratives of music, narratives that can dictate how we relate to music. The radical differences between Bailleachán Waidhbhre and the work of visitors to Éireann encourage us to question how issues of authorship, authority, perspective and context intertwine and impact on the representation of music. Indeed, despite their drawbacks, and notwithstanding the difficulties of accessing such collections, we must surely acknowledge the value of amateur collections and pledge to incorporate them into our studies of music in future. As Bailleachán Waidhbhre illustrates, we have everything to gain from such efforts and nothing to lose. Grimaldi. I think we have 5 minutes. Is it for questions or? So go ahead. Yes. The short answer is I don't know, but my reading of it is that she wasn't necessarily looking that far ahead. I think it's interesting that she's working in this region before the region got a local radio station. So in 1972, Radio na Gaeltachta, the Irish language wing of the national broadcaster in Ireland, they opened a studio on the mainland, just across from the island. It's not that it was immediately accessible, but it was in the neighbourhood and people did listen to it. And I did wonder, did she ever take an interest in it? Because, she died in 1987, so there's a full 15 years there where, if she were into collecting and recording, you think, okay, well, maybe she might have taken an interest in the radio. But she had young children by then, and it just didn't seem to figure. And then, she died when she was 52, so... The radio broadcasting is what I did with her collection. Yeah, so when I started my research, my my dad, like Barbara was the oldest of nine and my dad is the youngest. And my dad and another sister, Mary, had said, oh, you should ask about Barbara's tapes. I had heard nothing about these tapes until I started my research. So it took a while to get them, and then it took a while to find a machine to play them. And so it all took time. But then I went to another sister, Kathleen, and when I played them to her in her house, she said, oh, it'd be great now if you had your own radio program. And a light bulb went off, and I thought, that's that. Rather than me bringing these tapes around to all the people that could tell me about them, because you know the recordings were all like from 40 years or more ago, so I went to the local radio station, to Radio na Gaeltachta, broadcast a 12-part series that is still available online, and there's the URL. So they are in Irish, but as you heard from some of the clips that I played, that was the kind of the theme tune for the radio program is what I played for you. There were some kind of English stuff in there. Also, I was talking to somebody about the audio tapes. This is a letter. So they used to record letters to each other, and the, you know, Boston is the next parish over, really, for the Aran Islands. And you can see Quincy Mass address and the stamp on that. So these tapes used to go over and back. So I have a recording that was made in Boston by a relative that sort of never went back to Boston. They used to tape over the tapes. So yeah, that's the radio connection. She recorded material off the radio, yes. But she had nothing, she never worked with any professional recording institution or anything like that. So, okay.